There's here a Chinese scripture, which is very, very, to me, very, very typical of the meaning of death. Now, esoteric is that which is not obvious, that which is an inner meaning, a meaning that is hidden. Death is to life as going away is to coming. After blossoming for a while, everything dies down to its own root. This going back to one's origin is called peace. It is giving of oneself to the inevitable. And the giving of oneself to the inevitable is called preservation. He who knows this preservation is called luminous. He who knows it not perpetuates his own misery. Now, of course, all these poems depend on the quality of the translation from the Chinese. The first line, death is to life, is going away, is to coming, is very typical of the Tibetan concept of a wheel of births and deaths, how they follow one another as a continuity. The second line, after blossoming for a while, everything dies down to its own root. To its own root is its own essential nature. And that which remains when a plant dies is the pattern of growth which belongs to the species. And when the seed grows from that plant, the next cycle as it were, that pattern of growth is there to help it in its, to help it grow according to a pattern. This going back to one's origin is called peace. Peace isn't quite to me the right word. I would think that peace is a withdrawal from struggle in preparation for renewed life. It's a going back ready to start anew. And then it is the giving of oneself to the inevitable. In my own mind, I translated inevitable as natural law. It's the giving of oneself to natural law, acting in harmony with the universe. And the next line contains giving of oneself to the inevitable is called preservation. Preservation is probably not a very good, although the idea is there, it may be not a very good translation. Perhaps it would be being one with the natural law. The preservation is being one with the natural law, the expression of the spiritual nature, which is the same thing, or even in the case of man, self-realization. And the next line, he who knows this preservation is called luminous. Luminous to me would be liberated from the restrictions of the personality. In other words, enlightened and reaching spiritual concepts, bringing them into life. He who knows it not perpetuates his own misery. If we don't act according to the natural law and recognize the cycle of birth and death, then we are perpetuating our own misery. And we have talked about this in relation to death before. Now we have a little more time tonight. If there's any point that you want to ask me about, we can do so, because I think it's going to take a little less time than the other sessions have. The first point is the changing focus of consciousness. We have already seen that for man the process of dying is a withdrawal in stages of the spiritual self from the lower worlds or the lower vehicles in which it is enmeshed, so that it can return to its true spiritual nature with a harvest of the essence of experiences gained in the previous life. And in that, the word that is important is essence. It's not the details of the experience, it's that which is important in experience that is carried over. Now, the spiritual self in man is known to us as, but in waking consciousness, how do we know that, what is the effect of spiritual consciousness? Well, it's consciousness in the first place, isn't it? And it's life, because it's the higher that produces life. It's the higher spiritual aspects that produce life as we know it. And they are the aspects that are withdrawn, and in withdrawing cause the death of the lower vehicles. So the spiritual self in man is known to us in the physical world as life and consciousness. And this can manifest only through a form. These forms, whether in the physical or the thought-feeling worlds that we talked about, are in reality transitory because they disintegrate when the life is withdrawn. Now, we talked in an earlier lesson, in an earlier session, about the cells of the body. The cells of the body are held together into a pattern. When the life goes, when the higher forces leave the body, that pattern is no longer imposed upon the cells, and what happens? They disintegrate. Somebody said they're like a disbanded army. When they work together in the body, they are producing a corporate whole. The body is, in fact, acts as a corporate whole. When they are disbanded, they go their own separate way and decomposition sets in. But the cells, of course, are not lost. Their life goes on, but quite independent of the life of the body that has been. Now, this incident of withdrawal is called death. You can put that down in your notes. That's one of the basic things that we ought to keep note on. You should have a third page that is blank, or you have a bottom of the third page has room for notes. This incident of withdrawal is called death. This incident of withdrawal is called death. Often we have used the illustration of the diver in an old-fashioned suit with lead in his boots and a lifeline to the surface and being pumped air from above. He leaves the world of sunlight and the ship and the surface of the sea, and he goes down and is progressively immersed in water. As he goes down, he feels more pressure from the water. It gets darker because he's further away from the sunlight, and his movement is made more difficult. Now, if we take this as coming into incarnation, then at the bottom, when he's groping around on the bottom of the sea, perhaps looking for treasure of some sort, he is at the maximum of difficulty, maximum of limitation. He finds movement very difficult indeed. He can't see. He has to have a light of some sort to help him see. But all the time he's got a lifeline to the surface, and he can tug on that and he will be withdrawn. And he's being fed from the spiritual level by the air that is being pumped down the tube. Now, this is quite a good simile. Well, then at death, he starts to withdraw, and he goes up stage by stage, taking with him the experience gained at the bottom of the sea, until he reaches a level where he's in the sunlight of the spiritual self again. Does that help in your understanding? Well, that's the way I'm looking at it from the top, from the point of view of the spiritual self. We don't often look at things this way. We tend to try and interpret death in terms of physical existence, and this really is not possible. We make an attempt, I'm making an attempt tonight, but really, the after-death conditions, as Dr. Moody's informants all said, it cannot readily be described or explained in the language of the physical world that we have at our disposal. So now, the next point is death to the soul. You can take this down too. Death to the soul, death to the spiritual self, is to descend into matter and to be limited by it. Now, this is the key. Death to the soul is to descend into matter and to be limited by it. Death to the soul is to descend into matter and to be limited by it. Let's think of the diver, and you will see what I mean. The soul is dead when it's at the lowest level, or at the bottom of the sea, or in the physical world. So any other condition must be more alive. And that's why I took as a title for this series of sessions, Death Brings Life. death brings increased life. Now, I'll just read the seventh note. The life or consciousness in souls new and better forms as it moves onwards to its goal through a progress or the progression of birth and death. In other words, the next time the soul in the reincarnation process goes back to the bottom of the sea, it will have a slightly better diving suit. A slightly better suit that gives it a little more freedom and a little more ability to learn more. Because that's necessary for the understanding and the expression of the spiritual self, that it has a form that is slightly better. Now, the last sentence in number one, when consciousness is withdrawn from one level, a new focus of consciousness must be achieved at the next highest level. You see, tonight we're dealing more with principles than we have in the past. Do you remember when you learnt to ride a push bicycle, not a motorbike? You know, first of all, when you rode it, you had to concentrate every bit of the way. Isn't that true? And you had to watch that you turned this way to balance yourself and so on. And you had to watch your foot on the pedals and you had to watch where you were going as well as balancing. After you master a certain stage, what happens? In all our learning processes. You do it? Unconsciously. There's a little better word than unconsciously. Automatically. You do it automatically, yes. Well, this is the learning process, and this goes on after death as well. You're learning, you do a thing, and you learn how to cope with it, and then you deal with something else, and the previous experience goes on automatically. So if we bear that in mind, it will help us in understanding. Now, the second and third death, the first death is when the silver cord is broken, it's severed, and there's no connection between the higher principles, the spiritual self, and the physical brain. The second is when you leave the world of feeling, or thought feeling, sometimes called the astral world, and enter that which is the heaven world, which we described last session. But there is a third. When the heaven world is left behind, it's a subjective ideal state, a blissful state, and is described in many, many books, spiritualist books as well as theosophical books. But then there is a period when that process is complete and the spiritual self goes to into a sleep, a period of unconsciousness where it gathers itself together and gets ready to come down into incarnation again. In other words, the top level of the process of death has been reached, and now there's a preparation for the descent of consciousness again into physical limitation. That's sometimes called the third death. Now, in the diagram that we gave you last week, are there any questions about that? The one that is... I don't think that we can go into this much, but there is a very interesting illustration in these tables that you had, where it is said that the spiritual self becomes a chrysalis, becomes like a chrysalis. It goes into a sort of a non-conscious state, a growth state, but where there is no contact with the outside objective world, and it emerges as the butterfly. And this is quite an interesting way of looking at it. Assimilation of spiritual content of life's experience during the chrysalis period and the emergence of a more perfect expression of that essential spiritual experience as a butterfly is the process that it is said happens during the latter stages of the after-death process. Sometimes it's been called spiritual residue, a word I don't like very much. I'd rather call it the essential or spiritual essence of experience. It's a better way of putting it. Some spiritualists describe these changes of consciousness as the second and third deaths. They describe the experience as coming out of a mist or through a veil. Now, what is happening when you come out of a mist or through a veil? You're seeing light, you're becoming aware of light that you weren't aware of before. And what's the usual thing that is happening in our terms, and the terms we've been using? It's a focus, isn't it? You're focusing your consciousness. And as you focus a light, if you have a torch, and it gives a blurred beam, and then you screw it up a bit and it gives a pointed beam. Well, with the pointed beam, you can see more clearly that in which you focus or you point the beam. You see what I mean? So it's really a question of coming out of the mists and being able to focus on a new level with a new type of focus of consciousness. The change which takes place has been likened to that experienced by a caterpillar which enters a chrysalis to emerge as a butterfly. Now let's go on to the process of awakening. The periods of unconsciousness which precede each awakening during the point where this focus, refocusing process goes on, during the period of unconsciousness, it precedes each awakening. Now, these break the continuity of the after-death experience and allow the soul to break out of a purely subjective state that's dreaming within itself, like our thoughts and fancies and imaginings, and become aware of a new world in which his consciousness is functioning. Remember last time we talked about the soldiers who woke up after death, and they had created an imaginary surrounding out of their own thoughts, which was like that they left behind when they died. And then gradually they become aware that there is far more beyond that. And then they can see the people who are coming to help them. Do you remember? It's a question of refocusing consciousness. And now a child is interesting in this. A child in the physical world gradually becomes aware of the world outside itself by the senses. It uses something else besides senses, five senses and something else. Very important. Pardon? It's not a trick question. It uses a sense of balance. It's got to learn balance. Balance. And balance is the use of the senses. Some people say it is an extra sense. But anyway, it's something it has to learn. So it learns, first of all, to move, and to move according to its will, not just haphazardly. It learns to, if you watch a child, a year old, I've got a granddaughter, a year old, and to watch her picking up something is very interesting. She doesn't go quite straight to it, but she gets there. And when she learns to walk, she stumbles a bit, but she is balancing. Now, quite quickly, they learn to climb stairs, to climb trees, to run and to jump. And the walking process becomes automatic when they learn something further ahead. So it's the same thing. The consciousness actually focuses on one thing, perfects that, and then focuses on something else. Self-awareness is vague until the age of 7 and so on. Now, I quoted last time a very short passage from Thericod. After death, that which was man's interior world of thoughts, fancies, desires, and impulses becomes increasingly an exterior world of vivid, objective experience. We are, after death, only dealing with the memories and the experiences of the earth life. And gradually, they to us are interior during waking earth life, and they gradually become exterior, so we can throw our own thoughts outside ourselves and examine them. And remember, the being of light said that this was one of the things that happens. You are brought up to examine your own self. You examine your own nature by seeing your thoughts and your motives and so outside yourself. You get the process? It's one of the techniques that was used in the mystery schools of old, where they were able to project thought forms as colored images. And the pupils were able to see these in the Pythagorean school and in other mysteries in Greece and in Egypt. So it becomes objective. Now, these periods of unconsciousness serve a second purpose. As breaks in the continuity of the after-death process, they make possible the death of the old forms and a movement forward to new and better forms based only on that which was good in the old ones. It breaks the continuity. It's a resting period between, and it breaks the continuity because if there wasn't a break, there would be the same old patterns carrying on, and growth would not be possible. It's like the model cars. You get a new model coming out each year, and there's a break because it does bring in new features, new things. It's been rethought, restructured, the old model. I don't know whether that's a very good analogy or not. Number four on page two. Life through death to life. The harvests of one lifetime are carried over as seeds into the next incarnation. All experiences after death are the effects of causes set going during the earth life. The earth life provides the causes. In life, each one of us is continually making his after-death conditions by his daily thoughts, motives, feelings, words, and deeds. You can underline that, because that's important. We are continually making our after-death conditions by our daily thoughts, motives, feelings, words, and deeds. And quite one more, of course, it follows, I think. During the after-death process, these actions are sifted and digested. Here's the word you suggested. Only the good. Don't write this down, this is in your notes. Only the good based on loving action is absorbed into the spiritual self. Only the good based on loving action is absorbed into the spiritual self. The negative harvest of misdeeds, neglected opportunities, is not carried forward. What happens to it? It waits for us when we come into incarnation next life. We pick it up as those which are called skandhas, the attributes and limitations that we face in every life is largely the incomplete activity of the previous life. And of course, when there's no incomplete activity in a previous life, then we're liberated and we are free of the wheel of births and deaths. So really, these things are simple when you look at them that way. Positive action and effort, which is beneficial to the individual and or mankind, and probably mankind is more important than the individual, is built into faculty and ability and greatly affects the quality of life in the next incarnation. That which we have done that is of the ethical quality, which is good in any particular incarnation, is built into the spiritual essence, which is carried to the spiritual self in its continuity of consciousness, and it comes back with us as an improvement in the quality of life next time we are incarnated. Isn't that? That is the whole process. And there is evidence also that what happens during the after-death process can modify the conditions of the next incarnation. Now, how would this happen? Oh, this is exactly the point you were asking. This is out of James Perkins' book. I forget the name of it, but I did have it last week. Through death to rebirth. In the heaven world, the soul is actively engaged in elaborating in mental matter great plans and visions to be developed on earth. Many are, flowing language, but if you listen carefully, you'll see what he means. Many are the forms of transcendent beauty and power, or enterprises of brave proportions, that will have been worked out in the preceding heaven lives of the geniuses responsible for them, and subsequently are achieved in the physical form on earth. In other words, they have worked out the visions they have had into actual plans which are brought forward, and the next life they are put into actuality. So there is tremendous work that can be done, but it's always linked with that which you have done in the previous life, that which you will do in the next life. Aspirations frustrated during the earth life, this will cheer us up. Aspirations frustrated during earth life are fully attained in heaven, not simply prolonged, but completed in all their infinite developments that flow out of each incident and aspect. Modification of the conditions of the next incarnation depend on how well we have digested and worked over the lessons of the last earth life. The knowledge of the principles outlined above, we can see better how to prepare for death, and by so doing to ensure a better earth life next time. Take B first. This is number 5 in your notes. Now, there's a lot been said about this last thought at the time of dying, and the same, the last thought you have when you go to sleep. It appears that there is quite a lot of evidence that this is the starting point of the next life. Now, those of you who are astrologers may know something about this. I'm only suggesting this. Is anybody who would like to comment on that? B, the last thought at the time of dying is important. A. We should learn the art of dying and after-death conditions. Now, don't take this down, but listen to what I have to say. Consciously complete each stage of your life so that your understanding of it is well organized, so that when your time comes to die, you will have anticipated after-death conditions. That means that we should be able to, as we go along in life, to think about everything we have done, everything that's happened to us, and sort of work it out before we die. And then it makes the process later easier. In other words, keep your life organized as you go along. Is it easy? No, but it's an ideal. Because then you anticipate the death process and you understand it better when you meet it. Now, number C, the intellect. Intellect is the highest aspect of personality during earthly life and links with the spiritual self. Therefore, the development of the highest attribute of mind, creative intelligence, during our life on earth is most important in giving us food to digest in the after-death world and consequently giving more quality to the next life. Dr. Moody's patients testified to this. No matter how old you are, don't stop learning. This is what one of them said to him, a woman who had had this near-death experience. No matter how old you are, don't stop learning, for this is a process that goes on for eternity. Take every educational opportunity. You see? And they were aware in those few minutes, or the most hours, when they had that near-death experience, of some of these eternal truths that apply to after-death conditions. Now, a former president of this society, N. Sri Ram, in his book, The Death and Its Meaning, had this to say. How can the seeds of the old tendencies, so die-hard in their nature, be completely destroyed? This is the quality of our personality. They cannot be brought to an end by nature's mechanical action, because it is the nature of things under the blind laws of matter to continue as they are, to perform the same old motions. In other words, our personality activity tends to go on in the same way. The hard core of ourselves, formed of these tendencies, can be dissolved only when it is brought out of the darkness in which it flourishes into the objective light of pure awareness, in which the truth about it is fully exposed to the perceiving intelligence of our spiritual self. Now, do you remember in Being of Light, who as it were was sort of judged, the person that encouraged them to look at their own wishes, their own ideals, their own aims, their own shortcomings, and so on, with perfect love and understanding. And I suggested at the time, this is the higher self, the spiritual self of the person, looking at the quality of the personality, and in a sense, judging and working it out. And this is the process which intelligence carries out in the after-death conditions, facing up to one's own nature. Love is that which carries to the highest aspect of after-death conditions. It's of the spiritual nature of man. It links us with every other at that highest level. We are all one at the spiritual level. And if we make links of love with other people, it will bring us back to them and keep us in contact with them all the way through the life process. And N. Sri Ram again said, in love that wants nothing of itself, there can be no shadow of separateness. If we can realize that death is a matter of time, and there is unity only beyond the process of time, we may look upon death with kindly eyes as a friend. Now let us go to 6, rebirth. When finally the last impulses of the past incarnation have yielded all that can be expected in the heaven world, the transient personality completely disappears. The personality of that life completely disappears. The discarnate soul is one with his immortal self. Consciousness then reawakens and once more turns towards a new experience of life in the physical world to complete actions and to fulfill causes left over from previous lives. Usually there's no memory of previous incarnation. Paracelsus, whom some of you may know, who was one of the mystics about a century ago, said this: to remember his past lives in man's present state of imperfection would be merely a hindrance to his progress. And then Sri Ram again, we come back to the new physical body without any previous memory. Nothing remains of the old story. The old personality is gone. And we come back washed clean by the waters of Lethe, of course referring to the Greek concept of the underworld, which of course was very much this. We do not remember our past, and we may be glad that we do not. If we were to be burdened with all the things which happened to us in the past, what we had been and what we had done, our present life would be a nightmare if we could remember all the complications of the past. Each time we begin, not as an old entity, but as a practically new person. And H.P. Blavatsky said in The Secret Doctrine, the auric envelope is pure at birth. We have no build-up of thought feeling at birth. We have those horrid things I talked about, the skandhas, that we pick up which are incomplete, what are the attributes and so on from past lives. They are the pattern of our life. We pick up the pattern of our life, but not the details. The details belong to the past personality, and they are not available to us in the next incarnation. And you remember Wordsworth? Our sleep, our life is but a sleep and a forgetting. Life's star, which rises with us, hath had its elsewhere its setting and cometh from afar. In other words, we are trailing clouds of glory from the memory of the heaven world which we have left. But we're innocent in the sense that we have no build-ups of thought and feeling when we are born as a child. But then, as Wordsworth again says, shades of the prison house close about the growing boy. He becomes imprisoned in his own thought feeling. He gets conditioned by the thought feeling of other people around him. And as soon as a child goes to school, you see this happening. Now, no power can, at the bottom of page 2, no power can destroy life's desire to fill itself in new forms, to fulfill itself in new forms. That's a whole session, a whole thing in itself. No power can destroy life's desire to fulfill itself in new forms. Pardon? There is no death. Death brings new life. And you chop the branches off a tree and it immediately, you chop the top off a tree, it doesn't send up just one new trunk, it sends up three or four. Nature will renew itself, always. Now death is necessary for life. Without it we could not live. In the body, this you haven't got this, but we'll come. In the body, the cells break down every minute, and the waste is given off, the waste tissues are given off. But new cells are built until we get older, and then when the energy is not there, the new cells cannot be built, and then we move towards the point where death of the body takes place. In all life processes, there's a renewal. The old dies so that the new can be born. There is no change without death, and no life without change. Look, we're a bit late, but we'd like to put that down. That's a beautiful sentence. When having served its purpose, the formal vehicle dies, the invincible life principle reorganizes itself, ready to take a new form. The invincible life principle, the spiritual self, reorganizes itself, ready to take a new form. And yet in this great process, each unit of life at the human level retains its unique individuality, an ever-improving growth pattern, which is the distillation of past action and experience. And the Buddhists say that if there is anything that gives us individuality, gives us uniqueness from life to life, it is that pattern which is our true individuality, which has our uniqueness. It's a pattern of behavior which shows out through the personality. It's affected by the land into which we're born, the race into which we're born, the parents, and many other conditions. And it's affected by that which we carry over from the past. It's affected by the way in which we've digested the experience of the last life. But this pattern is that which survives, and which is us. And that perhaps is worth reading. Now, just to close, in 7, we've got some thoughts on death by Lucas Levi, the French Kabbalist. Death is the necessary dissolution of imperfect combinations. And beautifully put. It is the reabsorption of the rough outline of individual life into the great work of universal life. Only the perfect is immortal. Lovely thought. Only the perfect is immortal. To be immortal is good. One must identify oneself with God. Man, again, Eliphas Levi, man in his present existence only retains certain predispositions from his past existences. Another way of putting the same thing. That which we retain is a pattern. It's a pattern of action. And therefore, we have predispositions or tendencies to act, which we carry over from previous lives. Our souls, as it were, are, as it were, a music of which our bodies are the instruments. The music exists without the instruments, but it cannot make itself heard without a material intermediary. The immaterial can neither be conceived nor grasped. What he's saying is that you can have music, but the music is nothing until it's expressed through an instrument. So our life and consciousness is nothing in the physical world or in the thought-feeling world until it's expressed through an instrument. And the body, the physical body, and the emotional and mental body are the instruments of expression. But take away those instruments and the music is still there. Only the body dies. In a very beautiful way he's put it. And again, God precipitates no one into hell. It is man who can go there freely, definitely, and by their own choice. Hell is of our making. And we can get ourselves out of it if we do get into it. Anyway, that belongs to the past. Now look and see what Dr. Kubler-Ross, the investigator of death and dying, quotes her patients as saying. It is not the end of the physical body that should worry us. Our concern must be to live while we are alive, to live as much as we can, and to organize our thought, feeling, activity, and our physical activity as we go along, which was a point I mentioned earlier. And then this B was evidently said by an old woman who was hard and loud-mouthed, and a few weeks before she died, she softened, and softened tremendously. And this is what she said just before she died. Death is the final stage of growth in this life. That's a tremendous sentence. Death is the final stage of growth in this life. There is no total death. Only the body dies. The self or spirit, or whatever you may label it, is eternal. And the picture given of that old woman who loud-mouthed, she evidently was a real Tartar. She understood at the end of her life, and that's what she said, death is the final stage of growth in this life. There is no total death, only the body dies. The self or spirit, or whatever you may label it, is eternal. And then, to close, there's this very beautiful speech by Sir Edwin Arnold in The Light of Asia, which is a translation of the Indian scripture, which sums up the whole four sessions. Thou grievest where no grief should be, mourn not for those that live, nor those that die, nor I, nor thou, nor any one of these ever was not or ever will not be, forever and forever afterwards. All that doth live, lives always. Never the spirit was born, the spirit shall cease to be never. Never was time it was not, end and beginning are dreams. Birthless and deathless and changeless remaineth the spirit forever. Death hath not touched it at all, dead though the house of it seems. Nay, but as when one layeth his worn-out robes away, and taking new ones saith, these will I wear today, so putteth by the spirit lightly its garb of flesh, and passeth to inherit a residence afresh.